Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today we are joined by the CFO or Chief Financial Officer of a company that really doesn't need introduction. That's Nando's South Africa. So we're joined by Simon Adams just to talk about what their experience has been running, you know, one of the most well-known fast food outlets in the country, restauranting, you know, that type of thing. We've had restauranteurs on the platform previously just talking about some of the issues that they faced and what it's actually meant, but for today we are talking to a more well-known brand to actually find out what all of that has meant. Did they suffer because of what was going on with the lockdowns? Did they shift to online? How has all of that have been? And the man who is holding the purse strings is going to be letting us know how all of that has been. So Simon, greetings to you.
Hi, Mdia. Thanks for the very kind introduction and the time with you and your listeners today.
Now, thank you so much for being with us. I think a good place for us to start, I was saying to you before we started, the session, that usually we ask people to introduce their businesses, but, for Nando's, I think it's one of those that we all know. So from your, point of view, what we'll ask is, what does it mean to be the man who is holding the purse strings at, one of the most, well-known and well-loved, restaurant brands in the country?
Yeah, it's always great to work at a company that needs no introduction. And it's definitely been like that over the last 4 years that I've been at Nando's. Holding the purse strings is an immense privilege at a brand like Nando's. It comes with quite a sense of responsibility, and even more so, during a pandemic where, we are known for, our sassy marketing. I think that's what first springs to mind. But we do sell pretty good chicken. And in the background there, we manage the purse strings in a normal environment. I think the last year has maybe put the role itself into a little bit more of the limelight, as far as finance people can be comfortable with that. But yeah, it's been an incredible ride, and I've learned a lot. It's been a year to remember for sure.
And when it comes to Nando's itself, perhaps if we could get because most of the time we look at Nando's as being this local South African brand, etc. But in terms of spread, where are you guys? Because from my understanding, are you specifically for Nando's South Africa or the group?
So my role specific is for Nando South Africa here, in the birthplace of the brand. But where we are as a global brand, and we really are a global brand now, across the world in places like the UK, the US, Malaysia, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, the Middle East, parts of Africa, India, and expanding. And I think that's the beauty of the brand. It's been a homegrown brand here in South Africa, and it's been taken to the world with immense success. But my role in particular is centered around the South African market. That's my focus.
Now there are a group of people, that saw it fit to actually nominate Simon Adams as one of South Africa's top CFOs at the 2021 CFO Awards. What did you do, to convince these people that
it's a great question. I don't know. The nominations aren't you aren't privy to who nominated you, but I'm immensely grateful for whoever decided it. They saw fit to put me forward for the nomination, and it's been an interesting process. It's been fun. Finance people by their nature are quite reclusive. And for me, for the last month or so since the nomination became known, it's been great. We've had a couple of interviews, a couple of engagements, and I figured out that there are a lot more people that read or know about CFO South Africa than I would have thought in the past. But I think generally, me as a person, as a professional, I try to bring something different to the role, and I've tried to do that in all my previous roles, and especially at Nando's, and maybe where where I bring a little bit of fiscal prudence, I've also been able to take away from a brand like Nando's that the evolution of the role of a CFO is beyond that of numbers, right? Especially at a place like Nando's, there is so much more that goes into building what will ultimately be measured in numbers in a business.
And actually, before we actually, you know, get into that specific role and running or keeping up with Nando's finances, where were you before?
A career that spanned mainly FMCG, so brands are something that I love. I came from a global organization people may or may not know, BIC, which is the pens, the lighters, and the shavers. Global entity, and really a great place to work as well. And prior to that, I spent some time with Mondelez, previously Cadbury, previously Kraft, sort of in the brand FMCG space. And I took a walk across the line from sort of supplier to front end retail, and that's where I find myself now.
Would you say that, you know, I guess now we can get into some of the nerdier, you know, aspects.
Be kind.
You know, when it comes to running some of those brands, you know, it's all FMCG at the end of the day. But, you know, you've got a unique situation with Nando's, because sometimes it's hard to, you know, place Nando's, right? In some cases, someone might say, oh, it's fast food. Someone might say, no, but it's a restaurant brand, and, you know, stuff like that. So as Nando's, how do you, I guess, define yourselves? And does that in any way affect how you account for certain things behind the scenes?
It's a great question. I mean, especially here at South Africa, and very relevant. Our brand, although very, it's unique across the world as the Nando's brand, in South Africa, we are and started off as a predominantly takeaway brand, by South African standards, you go into a restaurant, you pick up your takeaway, and you consume the product off premise. And we've evolved as that business where majority of our sales are consumed, or products consumed off site. But if you go into other parts of our world, notably places like the UK, it's a predominantly casual dining brand, which means that, you know, people are coming in and sitting in the restaurants. You know, we've tried to position ourselves in South Africa to suit both those markets. We build fantastically designed restaurants I believe, are one of a kind. And we provide a unique experience if you go and sit in our restaurants and enjoy the ambience. And there's a lot of stories behind the design and the artwork and the furniture. And there's some really cool stories in that sense. But then we also are very, very comfortable operating in the world where you can come and collect your food, either coming into the restaurant or making use of our drive-through channel. And obviously the much talked about recent rise of deliveries, which we've done for quite some time as well. So, you know, we sit on both sides, to be honest. But I think we play on both sides fairly well, and we compete with you know, our counterparts on both casual dining and fast food.
And you've already started alluding to the issue of online, you know. So what has the last, you know, year done? I think that's the question where everyone asks, you know, what has COVID done to your business, you know? So from your point of view, did you guys suffer the losses that we saw? Because as you said, you guys have this duality where, you know, you've got the sit down aspect, but at the same time, you've got the takeaway aspect, right? So I guess the question is more of an on balance question, right? To say, did you guys suffer the losses that restaurant brands, you know, that we saw the restaurant industry suffering, or was that offset by that ability to continue trading, you know, online food delivery, that type of thing?
Yeah, again, another good question. Yeah, we, I mean, short answer, absolutely. We suffered some significant losses at the onset. You know, businesses are not built or designed, I think, to run without any revenue coming in, especially retail. And it happened, obviously, as we all know, within the matter of weeks, from, you know, the first announcement from the president to the, you know, the start of the lockdown at the end of March last year. And that top line just evaporated. So for 5 weeks, you know, we had to sort of get into a fairly quick and succinct crisis management, and making sure that we understood just about where everything is, given that there was no top line revenue coming in. And also doing that under the challenge of not knowing how long lockdowns were going to last and where it was going to go from there. to your question, you know, leading up to the pandemic, things like online, you know, predominantly delivery, as well as our own, you know, in-market or in our own in-house developed app and call center processes, those had been growing at probably some of the faster rates within the channels that we serve our markets. What COVID did, it just put, you know, fuel onto that fire and basically, you know, accelerated any form of growth. At one point, as we came out of lockdown, as you'll know, the only way we could trade as a restaurant brand and as an industry was through delivery. And that obviously eventually softened and became off-premise. So, you know, our investment into drive-through and that model helped. And obviously now we're back at a place where we can serve dine-in. So it created initially a challenge where we lost all our top-line revenue, but we maintained all our costs. And so we incurred cost immediately and cash flow challenges. And then as we were able to open up our brand, we were able to slowly but surely start to offset those losses and get back to zero. That was the first target, to make sure we, you know, we weren't losing money. And then as we've continued to recover through the lockdown stages, we've been able to rebuild our business. But it's on the back of what is now a fundamentally different, what we call a channel mix, where customers can choose how they choose to consume our brand, whether it's in restaurant, takeaway, drive through, or delivery. And online's been pivotal to that. So it's a strategy that we've been running with for some time. I think it's just like pandemic, and maybe that's the theme of the pandemic for most organizations, is that it just accelerated a lot of industry norms that were happening anyway.
Perhaps you could talk to us about what the economics, you know, as a follow-up, what the economics look like between those four different channels, and maybe how you've seen that mix evolving over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, within the sit-down channel, and I would urge any of your listeners to go in if they haven't gone into our restaurants of late. Go in and try. Not only from a social distance perspective, we're very proud of the operating procedures we put in place to keep our own Ndokas and our customers safe. But the experience of the product is, for me personally, it is by far the best. You know, it's coming straight off the grills onto a plate and at your table. But that being said, what we offer in terms of the takeaway channels are out there. They're not bad at all. So from an economics point of view, you know, you have the added cost that goes with takeaway. There's packaging, right? And you're putting all the product into various packaging for people to be able to take home. When you move into the delivery aspect, you then add onto it delivery commission. You know, and that's, I think, a lot about what's been publicized over, in particular, the last year with third-party aggregators in particular, the likes of a Mr. D and Uber Eats in South Africa are the predominant players. But we also have our own, what we believe to be a world-class offering in our own delivery service through our own app that, you know, the customers can make use of. But the economics are different. It is the least profitable channel of all our channels that we offer to our customers, because you're adding costs through that sort of chain of service until the customer gets their product. So, and we're working around that. That's the strategy. And because it is something, as I alluded to earlier, we've been doing leading up to COVID, it hasn't caught us by surprise. We've just had to act and react a lot quicker as fuel was put on that fire. And we've seen a channel that was the smallest part of our business has now, you know, sort of equaled some of the other parts now.
So I guess, you know, one of the most natural questions that people, you know, maybe someone has a mom and pops thing, you know, and they're thinking of going online, or, you know, some people I've actually heard, you know, I know one or two people that literally bake cookies, you know, and they'll go to work during the day and they'll just leave a helper at home, and they just have orders coming through on an app and stuff like that. So, but I guess the economics are different if you're like a small trader versus a brand such as yours. And the question then becomes, you know, is it really viable to invest in your own, you know, logistics network versus just leveraging a third party, like you said, a Mr. D, an Uber Eats, or whatever it is?
Another great question. And this is one that's probably taken up a lot of management space over, in particular, the last year, but even leading up to COVID, where it was something that, you know, we've been grappling with for some time. And, you know, everyone has their views. That's why I think delivery has become quite a polarizing topic, especially within the walls of the restaurant industry. But, you know, beyond that, into all industries that can obviously make use of a online platform. I think that to answer the question, first and foremost, you need to make sure your product can get to your customer. If you don't have a sale, it doesn't matter how good your cost management is. You can't turn any commercial profit. You need the sale. But that being said, you need to turn a commercial sale. So when it comes to a brand like ours, the sweet spot is incremental sales. So you're taking, we have to appreciate that there are customers out there that have never used us or won't or choose not to use us because they will feel that we're not accessible through an app. You know, their behaviors are on online. It's whether it's through an Uber Eats platform or Mr. D platform in the terms of food delivery or any of the other multitude of online platforms for other industries. And if you're not there, they are going to choose potentially not to use you. So when you go to those customers and you go onto these platforms and you then by virtue of being in that sort of virtual marketplace, that's a good sell because it's incremental. And I think the ability to absorb the costs that we have running our restaurants is then okay. And commercially, that makes a lot of sense. The challenge that we're grappling with is that when you had customers who were coming into your restaurants or customers who were making use of the takeaway options or the drive-through channels, and they choose now to stay at home, either by force or now an ingrained behavior that's changed over the last year, and they had then called channel shifted from those channels to delivery, you've got no additional revenue. You've got all the same cost, and now you've added on a delivery cost as well. So profitability of that customer in particular has naturally decreased. If you do that on enough scale, you potentially have a challenge when it comes to the overall business. To answer your question on the moms and pop shop, absolutely, it's difficult. You're going to have to manage that sensibly because, got to get to the customers. But it's an evolving challenge. And then as you get bigger, you sometimes have the benefit of having options. And I suppose you've got to get to that point as quick as you can.
Okay. And, one of the other questions, as you're talking, I'm now curious because, all of these ideas will be coming through your head and you're now thinking about one of the big things before lockdown that people were really talking about. And I sort of saw coming in a little bit during lockdown was this issue of dark kitchens, right? To say, if I'm Nando's, right, and I don't have a presence in a particular city, is it viable to just, instead of having the whole storefront retail thing, go and, you have your trained certified people, but you just make, that, as an online service, as Nando's, does that fit into the business model or, do you feel like it has to sort of be coupled with that, sit down / drive through experience where you're servicing all of those different channels in one?
Yeah, I feel like you've been sitting in on our management sort of strat sessions for more than a year now, Mudire. You're asking all the right questions. It is a great question. It is something that's banded around and is very publicized within the restaurant industry, not only in South Africa but in the world. There is a thing called the power of the brand, and naturally dark kitchens. And ghost kitchens, as they're also known, they dilute that. So you have brands that have never existed in the retail world, and they've gone straight to the sort of ghost kitchen because they can avoid all those, heavy capital costs. I mean, a restaurant business is capital intensive to start up, and it's not easy to expand and to grow. But if anything that the last year has taught me as a as a numbers person, a finance person, is that the power of a brand and brand equity is so important. And that balance between the two is for the long-term viability of a brand, I don't think you can decouple them. I think that there is a room for brands that are only based out of dark or ghost kitchens, but are they scalable to a size, that of the players in the industry now? Who knows? For us, we've looked at it, and we will continue to assess all options. You have to. It's 2021. You need to be able to be fairly flexible. But when you build a restaurant and you build as many as we have, you have inherent costs that now sit in your business. Until you've got a constraint on your capacity to make your food in your restaurant, opening up a ghost kitchen could very well just, put pressure on those restaurants themselves to maintain their commercial viability, because you're shifting potential sales that absorb your costs into a ghost kitchen. So it is something that's there, but I don't think it's been cracked yet in terms of scalability. And also the nuance around how do you manage and maintain your product offering and your quality. Because often I think the the commercial success of those types of kitchens are built on the premise that the operators try and bring in a lot of brands, and therefore shoot out from those kitchens, not just a Nando's, but any one of the other players in the market. In which case, you know, from us as an individually and a privately owned business, that can create some challenges long term about, you know, about our scalability and also our commercial viability as well. So watch this space. I think it's a global phenomenon, but let's see how it transpires.
Now, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that one. And, you know, before we end off, we just cannot end a discussion about Nando's and talking to the man controlling the purse strings at Nando's South Africa without talking about the marketing. Because, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, apart from the chicken, you guys are really known for, you know, how you guys present yourselves online, on social media, the marketing, and all of that. Right. And someone might actually just wonder, how much money is Nando's spending on all of these things? Is it even a cost, or is there just a team somewhere that just enjoys their jobs and just does that?
It's a bit of everything there, Madhira. It's probably a conversation for another day, but it's a world-class marketing team. And it's not just the team, it's all their partners that they work with. And yeah, the center of a brand like Nando's is the marketing function. You know, and I think a lot of the decisions that are made across our business emanate from that department and all the partners that they work with, whether they be external or internal. You know, I think without alluding to the numbers, obviously, for obvious reasons, I think what they achieve with what they have is incredible. And they do it, you know, based on a brand that's been built over 30 years. And they've just continuously built on some exceptional work. And they've stayed true to who we are. We're a proudly South African brand. We don't stray away from that. We get stuck into some of the topics of the country, which, you know, South Africa is never short of. And you know, through their excellence and their passion for the job, I think they are one of the happiest departments, you know, at the company. I mean, who wouldn't want to work in Nando's marketing? You know, they've been able to, I think, be a major part in carrying us through this pandemic, not just in it, but all the work and that foundation that they had leading up to it. And then obviously going out of the pandemic as well. And they've positioned us incredibly well. And as a finance person, it makes the job, you know, very, very easy when you've got functions like that. And you know, without you know, leaving the other departments out, you know, everybody, I think, leverages off that excellence that the marketing department brings. And us, for one, as the finance team, do so as well. So we're, you know, if they're listening, I would be very thankful to them. They must continue doing what they're doing.
I think just as a quick follow-up to that one, just because I know that you're not a marketer yourself, but, you know, there is the finance aspect. So do you think that a brand like, because we've spoken a lot about brand, you know, the brand equity of like Nando's, right? Does that help the company spend less or be able to stretch a marketing budget further than, let's say, someone who's starting out? Or by virtue of the size, are you sort of forced to spend more to keep yourselves, you know, on that level?
It's a bit of both, but I think what they do incredibly well, and this is where the numbers does play a part in the marketing world, is their return on their investment is industry leading. It really is. Sort of, again, without sharing numbers, when you sort of see what they have and what they do and the output that they generate, as we all know, like you said, there's a reason you don't need to introduce Nando's. You realize that their absolute return on investment, which is, you know, music to a finance person's ear, is exceptional. And I think for me that has been the most, you know, impressive thing, watching a department like that work.
Okay, cool. And then as we end off, you know, as a CFO, how do you see, I guess, your role, or, you know, your fellow finance guys, either in the industry or just across corporate South Africa? Because, you know, right now, everyone is the big themes, you know, across corporate South Africa have been preserving cash, you know, have been cost cutting, have been efficiencies, all of these words. So how do you see your, what's it called? How do you see your role when it comes to, you know, just helping to lead a country, not a country, sorry, a company through a crisis time?
Again, another good question, Madhira. You know, the role of the finance professional and the chief financial officer across organizations has been evolving for quite some time from what was, you know, historically very, very technical and quite back office related. And, you know, you hear a lot of terminologies around strategic partners and commercial partners and business partners. And I firmly believe that's what we are now. And more so than ever through the pandemic, we've needed to be that. What we've had to be, and I think what we'll have to be going forward, is being that soundboard that allows you to highlight, you know, good behaviors around cost management. Cost cutting is a horrible word. And, you know, when needs must, I absolutely understand and ascribe to the fact that may be the case. But cost management becomes incredibly important. And as the finance professionals in the organizations, I think it's important for us not always, which is our habit, to look down and look into the numbers and get consumed. You know, I think if we head and we look forward and you look up and you look about what's coming, you realize the decisions you make now not only need to see you through a crisis like we're going through or have been going through for the past year, but they need to form the foundation going forward. And if you so-called the cliche, cut into the bone, in order to save yourself, you know, through a pandemic, and you do things that are potentially too far reaching, your ability to then rebound, recover, and then sort of take your place in the market space after pandemic has subsided is going to be severely limited. And I think for me, as a finance guy at Nando's, that's been an incredible part of working with a great bunch of professionals leading ourselves through this organization or through this timing, is that, you know, We've done that. We've looked ahead. We've taken decisions that I think and I know we can look back now, even a year in, and we can look back with pride because they've been done for all the right reasons. We've taken the proverbial permanent marker and drawn a line between profit and purpose. And that's, you know, fundamental to what Nando's is. And we've stressed the purpose part. We've helped the communities that we've been part of. We've looked after all our Nandockers, which are employees in the restaurants and at the sort of head offices. We've looked after our business partners, our franchise partners, and we've made things and we've done things at considerable cost, and it's going to take some time to recover from that. But if I look back on it, we can with an immense amount of pride say the decisions we've made have allowed us to be able to look forward. And that's what we're doing now. You know, it's actually ironically pretty exciting times that we find ourselves now in as a brand, because the opportunities that we're seeing, you know, I think we're well positioned to take advantage of.
Brilliant. So that's been us. We're talking to Simon Adams, who is the Chief Financial Officer at Nando's South Africa, giving us some insight into what it actually means to hold the purse strings at one of South Africa's largest takeaway and, you know, restaurant brands. And also just talking about what it means to guide a brand like that during these crisis times, you know, and, you know, more than anything else, that marketing team, you know, what's actually going on there? Is it, you know, how much are they spending? You know, without getting too much into the numbers, he gave us a sense of what's going on there. And also just, you know, what it means to be a finance professional during these times and the role that one has to play to guide a company like Nando's through the pandemic. Also just enjoyed, you know, differentiating between the different channels that Nando's is serving its customers through, and he gave us a sense of what the economics look like for each channel. So that's been it, Simon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Madhira, thank you. The privilege has been all mine.
This is Madhira's Take.
What an amazing discussion that we've just had, you know, with the chief of finance from Nando's. That was Simon. You know, very interesting for me. I'm not necessarily someone who keeps, you know, such a big eye on retail. I'm more into technology, media, and telecoms. But because of that, the intersection of technology and retail, you know, over the last couple of years, accelerated by the pandemic, when you see the rise of e-commerce, especially in South Africa, where only in 2019 it made up less than 2% of total retail, but now sitting at around 5%. That's three times growth. Still a small percentage, but you know, it shows how much scope there is. But it also speaks to the type of growth that we saw during the pandemic. And you're seeing brands such as Nando's getting in on the action, deciding for themselves how they're going to proceed when it comes to their online and digital commercial strategies, investing in their own delivery system, you know, versus, you know, using Mr. D and Uber Eats and all of that. So it was really insightful to hear how they're thinking about that. And also just that whole marketing aspect, because they are, you know, one of those companies, you know, that's very edgy when it comes to marketing issues. But definitely, you know, a guest that we need to bring on again just to talk more. And perhaps next time we'll bring him on together with the chief of marketing or the CEO of Nando South Africa, just so that we can get an even fuller picture. You know, on a last point for me, it was quite fascinating hearing the different economics that are involved, because someone might think that online food delivery is going to be cheaper than simply going to the shop or to go to a restaurant. But he's like, no, it actually adds more costs, because you still got the same fixed base cost that's there, but now you're adding a delivery charge to it, you know. So all of that was very enlightening, talking about what's going on in terms of the drive-by, talking about the takeaway, the restaurant, online food. Very insightful. Definitely going to have another session with him. So that's been it. We'll catch you guys on the next one. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.